He sits there with the others, watching Ren and Stimpy, and smoking, and Dead Boy flicks in and out. And Carl's heart screams, "Laurie, Laurie, Laurie, Laurie," until the grass blots it out.
"So, where does all this shit come from?"
Barry says one night.
"What?"
Mark says.
"All this stuff we smoke and we sell. Where does it come from?"
"A stork brings it,"
Dino says.
"We buy it off the fucking mafia,"
Steve says.
"Really?"
"No, you thick cunt."
Barry goes red. "What do you fucking care where it comes from?" Noxer says. "Are you on fucking work experience or something?"
"Work experience,"
Dino says, laughing so hard, snot comes out of his nose. Noxer is a cunt with greasy hair.
"Gee, Ren,"
says Stimpy.
"He is holding out a plate of sick."
"It comes from different places,"
Mark says.
"They make the pills mostly in Holland. Coke, that's all from South America. And heroin, that comes from poppies that these ragheads grow in Afghanistan."
"From poppies? Like, poppies?"
"Yeah. Then it comes up here from Spain through Africa."
"This is like fucking geography class,"
Noxer says.
"I'm going for a shite."
The dead boy revolves around the dead boy.
"But where do you get it?"
Barry says. Dino looks at Mark. Mark shrugs.
"We get it from a mysterious druid,"
Dino says in a spooky voice. Barry looks at Mark.
"This bloke that calls himself the druid,"
Mark says.
"Fuck off.
I'm serious."
"I'm serious."
"Seriously?"
Dino says.
"That's what he's called."
"Why?"
"It's what he calls himself. He's a nut job. You'd get on with him,"
he says to Carl.
"What's a druid?"
Carl says.
"When do we get to meet him?"
Barry says.
"What do you want to meet him for?"
Dino says.
"It just seems like we should meet him,"
Barry says.
"If we're part of the gang."
"The gang,"
Steve says, with a chuckle.
"Trust me, you're not missing anything,"
Dino says.
"Bat's cunt, off his rocker. Gives me the fucking willies."
"Well, can we come next time?"
Barry says.
"When are you going to meet him next?"
Mark doesn't say anything. Neither does Dino.
"Saturday."
Steve goes from the couch.
"What?"
says Barry.
"We're going to see him on Saturday,"
Mark says. Outside the door, the toilet flushes.
"There's some stuff coming in."
"Can we come?"
Barry says.
"Yous can take my place if you want,"
Dino says.
"You wouldn't hear me complaining."
Barry's eyes glow like he's in Reservoir Dogs. Ren's eyes pop out and explode. Goes Steve.
"You're like Ren, and this dozy fucker's like your man Stimpy."
Carl's phone calls to him through the wall of fog surrounding his mind. Where is it? It's right in front of you. Janine is talking.
"Come and meet me,"
she says.
"It's important."
He rolls his eyes but gets up. Through the door in the hall, Noxer has his hand in Carl's jacket, where it hangs by the stairs. When he sees Carl, he takes it out and smiles and pats Carl's cheek. Then he goes into the living room with the others. A moment later, Carl is standing there with a churn of anger in his stomach, but no idea why it's there, so he just leaves. Janine is waiting in the church car park. They can't go to the greenhouse anymore. Her granny called the police after it got wrecked.
"Don't worry. She thinks it was Romanians,"
Janine says. Carl doesn't care what she thinks. He hates Janine, but she is the only way he has left to get messages to Laurie. Every day he tells her something to tell her, and she comes back with nothing. But there must be something he can say that would make her talk to him. There must be something.
"Today Laurie collapsed in class,"
Janine tells him. They are behind the trees, watching the rain.
"She hasn't been eating,"
she says.
"For days. Today in English, she had to stand up to read something, and she just keeled over. The doctor came in, and she had to go to hospital."
She puts her hand on his hand. If she could open the door marked Janine in Carl's soul, she would find a wall of black puke that would pour out and drown her.
I think she's been obsessing about Daniel,
she says. Carl doesn't say anything. He doesn't take Janine's head and smash it against the wall. You see, if she wanted to, Janine could tell Laurie about what he's been doing with her, and that would be the absolute total end of everything. So he has to keep seeing Janine to stop her from telling Laurie he's seeing Janine. It's like a riddle. It's like a cage with invisible bars. She stares at him spastically. Dead boy flashes up in her eyes. He is laughing at Carl.
I need some more vitamins.
He takes a little baggie out of his pocket.
They're for free,
he mumbles.
I want to pay you.
She kisses him on the cheek. It's like being pressed into wet ground.
Don't worry,
she tells him, sliding her hands under his shirt.
This is strictly business.
She sucks at his neck like quicksand. She rubs his trousers. He looks away at the rain and the fallen leaves. She cries out,
stop thinking about her, Carl.
And she kisses him desperately like a starving animal. And Carl kisses her back to stop her talking and puts his hand into her pants to close her eyes. His fingers slip sliding into her, deeper, deeper, deeper. Like they think that that way is a way back to Laurie. He had gone there for an explanation. Ruprecht has always believed in explanations. He has always seen the universe as a series of questions posed to its inhabitants, with the answers waiting like prizes for the boy lucky and diligent enough to find them. To believe in explanations is good, because it means you may believe also that beneath the chaotic, mindless jumble of everything, beneath the horrible disjunction you feel at every moment between you and all you are not, there dwells in the universe a secret harmony, a coherence and rightness like a balanced equation that's out of reach for now, but someday will reveal itself in its entirety. He knew the horror of what had happened could not be undone. Still, an explanation might fix it in time, seal it in, silence it. He imagined her breaking down and confessing, like people did on TV, spilling out answers like tears, he sitting in judgment until he finally understood. But that is not what happened. Instead, like a theory that promises everything and delivers nothing, that spreads like a virus to nullify what you thought you already knew, she had left him only with questions, terrible questions. Why didn't he tell Ruprecht about his mum? Why did he want to quit the swimming team? In Ruprecht's dreams, every night now he is back in the donut house, back amid the shouts, the lights, people crying, donuts scattering the floor, and Skippy, rapidly becoming a figure from the past, sprawled, drowning on the tiles beneath him, while the sea beats away in the distance, unheard under the traffic, a dark blue line, lost in the greater darkness of the night. Why? Ruprecht yells at him in these dreams. Why? 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 But Skippy doesn't answer. He is going, going, slipping away through his fingers, even while Ruprecht is holding him, even though he holds on as tight as he can. The days that follow see an exponential increase in Ruprecht's donut intake. He eats them constantly, at every hour of the day and night, as though in an endless race with some invisible, inexorable competitor. The other boys find this creepy, given what's happened. But for Ruprecht, it's like the more he eats, the less they mean. And the less they mean, the more of them it seems he can eat. As if they are genuinely becoming zeros that take up no space, crowding into his stomach, a belly full of nothings. His skin becomes pocked with angry-looking hives, and he is no longer able to do up the top button of his trousers. Dennis jokes that it's a good thing he didn't go ahead with that new portal idea, or he might have got stuck halfway into a parallel universe. But Niall, for once, doesn't laugh. In the classroom, he ceases to be a moribund non-participant. But although his hand goes up all the time, The answers he gives are never the right ones. 8 colours in a rainbow? The capital of Sweden is Oslo? Erosion. A process of gradual wearing away. From the Greek word eros, meaning love? No one has ever witnessed Ruprecht getting a question wrong before. There is, initially, a certain level of schadenfreude at this lapse in perfection, even among his teachers. But from straightforward wrongness, it soon degenerates into something much more unsettling. A hydrogen atom has 2 dads. The main export of Russia is C-sharp. Jesus instructs us to diffract sunlight. Every time the teacher asks a question, often before they've finished asking, there is Ruprecht with some dizzyingly untrue response. And when they ignore him, he shouts things out, completing their sentences for them, turning whole lessons into gibberish, snowdrifts of nonsense so deep and bewildering, the teachers often have no choice but to abandon the class and start again from the very beginning. They give him the benefit of the doubt, hoping he'll snap out of it. But time goes by, and Ruprecht's behaviour only gets worse, his grades lower, his homework more obscene, until finally, feeling as if they are banishing their firstborn, they start asking him to leave the classroom. Soon he's spending the greater part of his day out on the corridor, or in study hall, or in the infirmary getting an ice pack on his nose. Because the forces of darkness do not like this new rebellious Ruprecht either, do not welcome his deviation from his ordained role in the hierarchy. The messages posted on his back become more virulent, and the blows intensify too, slaps becoming punches, shin kicks heading groinward. Every time he takes a piss, someone will push him into the urinal. Ruprecht carries on like none of it is happening.
Please stop.
Jeff Sproke begs him.
Stop what?
Just be yourself again.
Ruprecht merely blinks like he doesn't know what Jeff means. And he is not the only one. The whole of the second year is undergoing some dark, psychic metamorphosis, whereby each of them is less and less himself. Test results are plummeting. Indiscipline soars. Boys talking among themselves, turning their backs, telling the teachers if they object to fuck off, fuck themselves, get fucked. Every day brings some new outrage. Neville Nelligan, previously unassuming middle-of-the-roader, asks Miss Nerean how she'd like to smoke his cock. Kevin Wong pulls a punch on Mr. Fletcher in science class. Barton Trelawney kills Odysseus Antipopopoulos's pet hamster, Achilles, by lifting it out of its cage and squeezing it into pulp with his bare hands. Bus stops are vandalized, chippers defaced with flung punnets of curry sauce. One morning, Carl Cullen gets up in the middle of his remedial maths class, lifts his chair and puts it right through the classroom window. For a time, the automator explains away the growing enemy as a process of resettling. But soon the malaise begins to spread through the school. When the senior rugby team are defeated in the first round of the Paraclete Cup by traditional whipping boys White Castle Wood, the acting principal finds himself under the cosh. The senior team is Seabrook. This humiliation seems to articulate something deeply amiss at the very heart of the school. There are whisperings among parents and the higher echelons of the alumni organization. Those priests who do not approve of the automator's plans for modernization, who have grave doubts about the very idea of a lay principal, become more vocal about their misgivings. Especially since the word from the hospital is that Father Furlong is out of danger and on the road to recovery.
Des Furlong's not coming back. They can get that through their heads for a start. Man's heart's like a puff pastry. How do they think he'd be up to running a school?
A whole new vein has appeared in recent days to throb in the automator's forehead.
I've got teachers moaning at me because they can't control their classes. I've got parents whining down the phone because their kids flunk a test. I've got the rugby coach telling me the team's got no morale. Everyone expects me to have the answer. I feel... God damn it, I feel like I'm carrying this place on my own. on my own.
Tea?
A low voice at his elbow causes Howard to start. He keeps forgetting Brother Jonas is there. He has an eerie capacity to melt into the background. Trudy is on sick leave. The absence of her feminizing touch heightens the militaristic feel of the acting principal's office. The automator turns to Howard with his newly characteristic expression, a blend of browbeating and entreaty.
I want your professional opinion, Howard. What the hell is wrong with these kids?
I don't know, Greg.